Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cafe Esoterica Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Come on in, pull up a cozy chair, and listen to wonderment as we bring you the most enlightened guests on web radio. I am your hostess with the mostest, Sean Cohen. That's me, a psychic, medium, metaphysician, author of 4 books, teacher of esoteric knowledge for 37 years and counting, which is why I am so proud and honored to bring you the authors and practitioners in the know from the Mind, Body, and Spirit Compendium of Life, as well as experts in divination and holistic healing, fabulous tarot readers, wise and profound astrologers, and even the odd rock star, just for your edification and enlightenment. We've been on hiatus, but we're back in the saddle again and raring to go for our 4th season of Cafe Esoterica Radio, broadcasting to you live every Thursday at 7 to 8:30 p.m. UK time, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and worldwide, so find your time zone and dive in. Want to be part of the show? Please do. Call in on our new number, which is 858-956-3204. Chat in our chat room, which is located at the end of our landing page on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't find it there, just refresh your page and it will appear. Can't catch us live? Not to worry. You can find us on many formats like TuneIn, Podbean, Stitcher, and now Spotify. And you can watch me simultaneously broadcast our show every week live on YouTube. Just go to YouTube.com, put in the search Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you'll see me there live talking to you. So grab your latte, your cappuccino, perhaps a herbal tea, and your best friend, and trip the light fantastic with us once more. And as always, your table is reserved. So come on in. Well, we're having some difficulty tonight, but, you know, Pluto went direct. I don't know. Mercury went into Scorpio. This astrologer could explain it, but... Martin, if you can hear me, my guest tonight is Martin Adams, who is the author of a series of children's books called The Ravens of Fairborn Hall. He's also done some other books, another book which we'll talk about, but can't talk about him if we can't hear him. So, Martin, can you hear me? Yeah, no reply. See? So I told Martin to, he is in the UK, he'll have to make a phone call to my home, and I'll put him on speakerphone. I don't know what else to do. If you can't hear me, Martin, there's something wrong with your device. I don't know, and you won't hear that either. But we're trying to communicate on a couple different, he's on Messenger saying I'm here trying, but trying is not doing, my darling, so you have to get on, otherwise we have no show. So while Martin's trying to figure out that, you can watch me on YouTube if you like. Go to youtube.com and put in the search Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you will look, scroll for the live. It says live, you know, little red flashing light there, and you will see me. And I can't see you, but you can see me. And do come on in. Do come on in. Let's see if I can get Martin to call me on my house phone. That's all that's left now. But not where, okay, let me, I'm sorry to have to do this. I got to get my guest on. But no, not working. Can't hear you. Okay, I don't know if he's hearing me. Well, you must be, Martin. You must be doing something wrong. in the studio. And we're live on air and I'm doing this, which I don't really like to do. This isn't professional. But, you know, crap happens. What am I supposed to do? You must be in the excuse my French. You must be. But we are live now. So please call. Okay, folks. Well, that's all I can do. If he doesn't show up, I'll make the show short tonight. That's it. I mean, he has to. I send people the details on what to do, and it's not easy, I know. But if you can write a book, you should be able to figure it out. So come on, Martin. I trust that you're smart. Here's another one. Hold on.
Hello?
Martin,
hello?
Can you hear me? Oh, at long
last. I can
left.
Hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Now I can.
Ah, hello.
Hello. Welcome to Cafe Esoterica Radio. Thank God.
Whoa,
you know,
amazing.
Okay. Yeah, what happened there?
I have no idea.
No idea at all. I've got two things that you've come in on two lines, basically. This one is working, so I can get rid of this one. If God help me, dare not hang up, but... The studio is a virtual studio, which happens basically on my computer, on my laptop. But I subscribe to Blog Talk Radio, which is actually in America. It's in New York. And I have a call-in number, but it's San Diego. And I don't want you, who lives in the UK, to call San Diego because it'll cost you a fortune, basically. And I'm in London. I know. You're in Manchester, I think, right? Birmingham, sorry. I knew you were up north somewhere. But basically, it's cheaper to call London than it is to call San Diego.
Yeah.
So you're here now. Okay, I'm going to keep your mic open. And Martin, just hang in there. And I'm not even going to shut your mic because I dare not. I don't want to lose you. If something happens, though, because Blog Talk Radio is notorious for these kind of glitches, if something happens, you'll just... You just do what you just did. You just call back in. But anyway, I'm going to ask you to just hang in there and let me do the show news, introduce what I need to do for you, and also tell the world what's happening. Okay, folks. So, thank you. So, as I said before, you can watch me on YouTube. You don't have to, but if you're listening live and you want to, please do. You're welcome to. And again, just go to, as I said before Martin came on, just go to youtube.com and put in the search Cafe Esoterica Radio and you'll see me there. And say hi in the chat room there because you can talk directly to me. And when Martin comes on, you can ask him questions if you want to. Tonight's show, or tonight in the UK, 2:00 in the afternoon on the East Coast of America, 11 a.m. in California, IA, in the West Coast and all over the world. Welcome. We're going to have a show about my guest is a children's author as well as a spiritual seeker. So it's a very interesting combination, and we'll talk about the magic that led him to contact me when we get to Martin. But first, as ever always, let's talk about last week's guest, which was the wonderful, delightful, intuitive tarot reader, Jennifer Walker Zen, who was my guest. She's absolutely delightful to have on. Very interesting soul, very spiritual. And, you know, if you want to check her out, she does YouTube videos every day, all the time on her YouTube channel, which is Jennifer Walker Zen. And her website is www.jenniferwalkerzen.com. So if you want to check out her page and maybe go and see her for a reading, why not? Next week, October the 10th, we have Jungian psychotherapist Catherine Olivetti. And Catherine and I are acquainted. She's amazing. I don't have anything less on my show. Amazing guest, enlightened guest, awakened guest all the time. That's the name of the game, Cafe Esoterica Radio. I am your hostess, which I forgot to say, Sean Cohen, just in case you didn't know who it was that was speaking. And I mentioned last week that Catherine would be the last show of the season. Actually, I was wrong. I forgot. I booked the lovely another Catherine McIntyre. And Catherine McIntyre, she'll be on the October 17th. This is closer to Halloween. And it's very interesting. She is an astrologer, 25 years as an astrologer. But she's also a channeler. And she has gotten in touch with, Thoreau, the writer and the poet. And she channels him. So this is, it's very interesting. Her book is called The Thoreau Whisperer. So Henry David Thoreau. And what an interesting show that'll be right before All Hallows Eve, which of course is the 31st of October. Now, I'd like to introduce Martin Adams, who is the author of a series of children's books about a pair of twins who get up to all kinds of mischief and magic. The books are called The Ravens of Fairborn Hall. He is also the author of an adult book examining his own spiritual journey called Journey of the Initiation. I'm going to read his bio. He sent me this. And tonight's show hopefully is about for children too. So if you've got kids, and they know this series of magical children's books, please have them come on in. We'll keep it PG, I promise. So here's Martin's bio. Martin was born in Birmingham in 1967. In 1988, he moved to Manchester, where he graduated. That's where I got Manchester from.
That was a long time ago.
Where he graduated in geography at the Manchester Metropolitan University. Throughout the 1990s and early 2000s, he worked in Holland during the summer in the seasonal flower bulb export business and traveled during the rest of the year. He traveled to India 15 times, which is a lot, staying there for a total of 5.5 years, where he developed a sense for the spiritual and learned the practice to practice meditation. He also indulged his interest in ancient civilizations by traveling to Egypt, Greece, Peru, Bolivia, Cambodia, Laos, and also traveled in Nepal, Sri Lanka, the United States, and Australia. That's some traveling. He taught science and religion in high schools in the UK in 2003 and 2004 and became a house husband in 2007. Right on, brother. With the birth of his first son, a second son was added in 2009. He now lives in the UK in the Midlands, where he is self-employed as a gardener and decorator. In his spare time, he reads comics and paints pictures of Indian gods. Welcome, Martin.
Well, Hello. I'm so glad that I finally made it. Okay. Okay, I bought a new headphone and mic especially for this tonight. So I've never used it before. So you know, if I'm too loud or something, you have to tell me, or too quiet, you know, let me know.
No, you're perfect. There's another blurb about the journey of initiation, but I'll do that before we start talking about that book. Let's go back. Now, Martin, you may not be familiar with my show, but the interesting thing that I want to just introduce my guests, and I mean my listeners, who are all over the world. You hear me rattling paper. That's the script I have. I have a script for every show, you know. Okay, so here's what's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Martin, you dinged me on Facebook, and you said, I keep having this idea about the name Cohen in my head. Do you want to tell our audience that? Because that's quite magical.
Well, actually, it was really a matter of, I've been like sort of friend requesting quite a few people because I just want to get my work out there. So I've been like making lots of friends on Facebook. And when I saw your name, Cohen, I thought, oh, that's definitely one I've got to go for, just because... it's a name that kept on popping up some time ago. When I was writing the my second series of books on the Ravens of Fairborn Hall, at that time, that second series is called Trapped in Time. And during that time, the name Cohen just kept on coming up again and again and again. And so I looked it up. I Googled it to find out what it meant, and it told me that it meant like a high priest. It was a Jewish name meaning high priest. So so when I saw your name, I thought, oh yeah, that's definitely someone I'm going to friend request. And then you came back to me and said, hey, do you want to be on my show? And here I am.
Isn't it amazing? That's how they work, you know. The spirits, the heavens. I've had a lot of people, not a lot. Well, let's say over 3 years' time, I've had a good chunk of people somehow find out about me. Whether they heard the show, that's different. But I'm talking about in these kind of cryptic circumstances or very spiritual circumstances. Now, I opened my door today. I was busy doing a million things, and I opened my door today, and as soon as I opened my door, there was a white feather on the mat, and I thought, right, you're special. You're definitely meant to be on the show. See, they talk to me too.
Let's take our signs where we can get them.
Absolutely. So you're very
welcome.
You'll
be amazed at how happy that seeing the second magpie makes me. You know, I see one magpie and I'm like, oh, just one magpie. And then I see the second one, I go, yes! Two magpies.
I know what you mean, but do you want to share what that means for our audience? Because that's quite a British thing. That's a very, I never heard of that until I came to the UK.
Okay, right. So in the UK here, there's a rhyme that goes like, it's about the magpie, and it says, one for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl, four for a boy, five for silver, six for gold, seven for a secret never to be told. And everybody of my age knows this because there was a program on the TV, a kids program called Magpie, when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old, and they used to sing that as the theme tune. So obviously when you see one magpie, it's a warning of sorrow, and you see two magpies and it's like joy, it's like something good's going to happen. So it's probably some old British tradition that we all know over here that I'm sharing with you.
Well, that's because that's really fascinating, and I know quite a few mystics over here and psychics and whatever, and they used to do that too. And I say, what are you talking about? Oh, we got to see a second magpie. We got to see.
Yeah.
Chicken Little, the sky is falling. We got to see.
Yeah, my mum told me that whenever she sees one magpie, she always says, "Oh, Mrs. Magpie, where's your husband?"
I heard that too. My neighbor's Irish, and she says that. My neighbor Adrian is Irish. She's from Ireland, and she always says that. If she comes over for a cup of tea, and we look out because we're on the ground floor, we look outside our window, and you see them. She said, that's funny because I thought that was just her.
No, it's obviously part of the tradition. Yeah. Yeah, it's like opening all your windows and doors at New Year, isn't it?
See, that's another thing. We don't do that in the States either. But, no. You know, whatever. These are different magical traditions, and they all mean something, you know, and which brings us into, very nicely, your series of children's books, which are very magical. And although I have not, sadly, had the pleasure to read them, the things that I looked up about them were fascinating. So let's go back, Martin, just as we do. I do this with all my guests, because remember, my audience might be listening, thinking, you know, I like to tell people how you get started, because I believe in the power of the you know, the first timer, the innocent, you know, the person who's trying, the person who wants to try. And I've been a teacher myself of metaphysics for a long time, you know, 38 years. And I always say to my students, you know, how can I do it? How can I do this? How can you do it? By learning how other people do it, by knowing that anyone can do it if they try. So Martin, you may not be able to see me on YouTube, but I'm going to hold up a book. It's not your book. But it's a big, fat book called The Writers and Artists Yearbook 2019. And look at how big it is. I'm just showing my audience. And if you're a writer and you want to be published, this is your Bible. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. It's never easy. These things are not meant to be easy. They're meant to try you. So let's go back to the beginning. What made you think about the story? How did you put it together? Go from there.
I guess when I look back over the past, over all of my life, I've always been trying to write something or other at some point or another. You know, I've always been a big comic book geek, so most of the time I've been trying to write and draw comic books. And so I've always been trying, basically. Since the death experience that I had in the year 2001, I've written a few books about that experience, and I'm always looking for ways to incorporate that kind of spiritual truth into fantasy. And so I've always got that going on within me. And then I think with the Ravens series, you know, I've got two boys, one's 12, one's 10 at the moment, and I started writing these books a couple of years ago, so the eldest would have been 10, the youngest would have been about 8. And I read to them a lot. You know, we read to them every single night until probably 2 years ago. So I read a lot of books to them. I read, like, you know, The Lord of the Rings and all the Narnia books, and I've read all of Enid Blyton's books. And and I guess because you're reading so many of these books to the kids that you want to be able to write something that's similar. You know, you have that kind of inspiration going on. And, you know, the Ravens books, in some way, are a bit like the classic kind of Famous Five Enid Blyton books of, you know, the kids get separated from the parents and they go off and have an adventure, and there's secret tunnels and secret doorways and all that kind of aspect to it. And I've lost my flow now. Where was I? There's books like Dan Brown books. You know, I love the structure of Dan Brown books, and I love the way that he takes real mystical things, you know, and turns it into a fictional form. And you know, so that's another sort of one of the inspirations that I have for it. But really, there was things like, you know, and books like Harry Potter as well. All those kind of things are a great inspiration to me. And
I love Harry Potter.
I guess one of the first things that came to me with the Ravens books is I was watching an old Jason and the Argonauts film with the kids, you know, like Jason goes off to find the Golden Fleece. It's the classic 1966 film. It's absolutely brilliant, yeah?
I love that. I was a child in that, and, you know, I'm a bit older than you, but 1961... It was scary to watch, but it was amazing cinematography at the time with the skeletons of the Argonauts and all that.
Yeah. And I loved that film when I was a kid. Yeah. So when it came on a few years ago at Christmas, I watched it with the kids. I taped it so they could watch it, so they could have that feeling, that sense of awe and wonder at it as well. And, you know, I started thinking, whatever happened to the Golden Fleece? You know, like, once it was, like, sort of found. I mean, obviously, I know it's a metaphorical thing, but what if it was a real thing? What would have happened to it? How would people have kept it hidden over the years? And I had this funny little thought that, like, someone would have made some, like, hats and gloves and scarf out of it because it's a fleece. Yeah. And so these hats and scarf and gloves would have, like, sort of magical properties. And that was one of the starting points for the Ravens of Fairbourne Hall. It was like trying to look at, you know, old magical mythological items and trying to think about how they would be used nowadays, you know, as magical items. And so that was one of the starting points. But really, for every book that whenever I'm writing books, I write down every idea that I have. And I tell this to my kids, just write down every idea that you have. And it doesn't matter that whether you use those ideas at the end of the day or not. It might all be that, like, what often happens is the book completely changes when you start writing it from what you think it's going to be. But it's just to write down those ideas. And I find that once you write down an idea, it makes space in your head for more ideas to come in. And then you write those down, and then more ideas come in, and you write those down. And after a while, you can look through all these ideas, and you start to find a plot and a storyline in there, and you start working with that. But that's really the starting point. I'm sorry, that's a really long answer, but there you go.
No, that's what we're here for. We're listening to you. That's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, so Martin, let's just talk about that a little bit. So. I remember teaching, this is so important. I just want to make a point because, you know, people out there, you know, today kids have the phones, don't they? And although they're reading, they're not reading for very long. They're reading, you know, a little text or a couple, you know, emojis. And it is absolutely essential to teach your children to read well and read books. And we know this through the way the relationships are changing because of technology, and the children, their relationships are changing with not only the other peers, their kid, their friends, but with anyone, with the ability to have conversations, with the ability to connect emotionally and intimately as friends. You know, it's not like Stand By Me the movie anymore. It's, you know, the kids movie. It's more about they'll sit around a table and they'll all be on a gadget. They're not even talking to each other. Yeah. So I just want to make this point because back when my daughter was, she's 23 now, but when she was little, you know, this was like the big, she was born in 96. So this was the big sort of, the technology for kids now. They have the Game Boy, they have this and they have that. But one thing that I did if your parents, if you're out there and you're listening, please listen to this, okay? Please hear this. Children need to learn to love reading. Now, there are kids who have dyslexia, okay? There are kids that have different issues. But if you read to your children, that time, not only does it bond you with your children, but it expands their brain. And we all want smart kids, don't we? So, you know, there's a thing that happens in the brain. Now, I taught my daughter to read when she was four. And this is how I did it. And I just think if we're talking about kids and kids' books and getting kids to read, which J.K. Rowling did with Harry Potter, she did a miracle there, really. But just tells you, and we're going to talk about the magical child, too, as a theme in a minute. But it just tells you how hungry kids are. You know, they're hungry for adventure. They're hungry for things that they maybe can't do because they're limited between the school and now maybe after school club, and that's about it, you know, or the weekend they might go to a friend's, but a lot of kids don't have even that luxury. But a book you can get out of the library for free, and our libraries are really needing desperately people to use them. So that's killing a couple birds with one stone, not a magpie, of course. And that also brings me back to, how do you teach your children to read? You sit down with them every day before they go to bed, or in the morning if you're a stay-at-home parent, and morning is when they're most awake, most fresh, really, the brain, and you just begin to sound the letters out. A, B, C, D. I remember hearing from a girl who was very traumatized that her father tried to teach her to read with like a, an adult book. Which is nuts, you know. So we need reading children. Reading children will grow up to become educated children. They will grow up to become thinkers, and not brainwashed, but real thinkers. You know, if you think about, there's loads of statistics to back up what I'm saying, and I know Martin would love to. You read to your children. This is how the story came about.
And can I just say there's another aspect to it as well that's really important, which is nursery rhymes. and singing nursery rhymes to your kids, you know, like singing Hickory Dickory Dock and doing the hand movements. And there's so many nursery rhymes that are meant to be sung to the children with hand movements. And, you know, nursery rhymes carry that sort of like rhythm and resonance of the language. And it's something that's like really important to like children, but it's something that's largely forgotten about in the modern world.
Yeah. Or they might do it in nursery school when the kids are like four, but there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee. Yeah. And so, you know, the time spent with our children, we're busy. All parents are busy. Very few have the luxury to stay at home. That means the other person's out working all day, you know, and if and a lot of single parents out there, I think they're now in statistics equal, if not more, than married parents, which is, you know, shocking in itself, but there you go. I was a single parent. I know how hard it is. But at the end of the day, to have your child be able to think for themselves, to choose to read, to choose to read is a great gift that you give your children. And Martin's book, to the Raven. How did you come up with the idea of the twins? Let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, I guess, can you hear me?
I can hear you well, yes.
Okay, yeah, okay. To be honest, I think I wanted to have like a male and female brother and sister, because I want the books to be accessible to girls just as much as for boys. And action, adventure, and magic, for some reason, it tends to be seen as like a boys' genre. So I wanted to have a strong female leading character in there. And when I thought about it, I didn't want one of them to be older than the other one. I wanted them to both be the same age, and so they had to be twins. But even though they're the same age, they've got very different personalities. So Mithra, the girl, she's like really strong-willed, and she's very pragmatic. She's very much like just get on with it kind of person. Whereas Tam, the boy, he's very he's much more careful and cautious. And he's much more of a follower rather than a leader, you know. So, you see that right from the very first page of the book, that like sort of Mithra is leading the way into the adventure, and Tam's following and going, oh no, should we do this or shouldn't we, kind of thing. And you know, so I wanted, because like I say, I mean the genre is seen as a boys' genre anyway. I think boys will love stories because they're action and adventure. So I wanted something to like sort of to bring girls in and make girls go, yeah, okay, I like this female character because she's going and getting, she's making it happen.
I love her name, Mithra.
It comes from the Roman god of resurrection, the Mithra and the Mithraic like initiations that used to take place in the Roman era.
And that's very interesting too.
Tam is the same. I think it's the mayor, and I think Tammuz is the concept of Ishtar, and the living god. So again, he's another god of resurrection, and that's why I chose that name.
Really. Okay, something. Now let me just say this: I'm getting an echo for myself. And Martin, you're coming in and out, in and out. And it says here on my screen at my studio, at this time, some hosts are experiencing troubles with the delay in muting and unmuting calls. Wow. Many times, waiting a few seconds or double-clicking will work. Now, it sounds like my echo left, so let's just keep going.
Am I echoing? Yeah.
You're not echoing. You're coming in and out. Like, I don't know why. Are you moving any device? Are you moving your head?
No. I'm keeping them quite still. I'm not moving at all.
Okay. You know what I'm going to ask you to do? This is just a quick fix. Pull out your. You said you've got a new headphone, right? Just unplug it and plug it back in. See if it works without. try that. Martin?
Yeah.
It's low now. See, there's something. Fiddle with it a little bit. I can't hear you.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah,
hello.
That's better. That's hello. It. That's it. Yeah, that works. See? It's okay. Something with the little gadget that's. Sometimes this happens to me on my laptop. If I put in my headphone, and the headphone, I know yours is brand new, but it could be the little hole in there when you plug in that's a little bit, you know, not quite right. But anyway, we can hear you, and that's all that counts. Okay, I need to go to a break. Go on.
I was going to say a piece of technology my Edge has got in mind. It's got its own and all. Or whatever. That's just the
okay. That's way. Well, Martin, listen to me. That is going in and out badly. So you know what?
Okay.
You know there's an issue. That's what Blog Talk Radio's got a big sign here across my thing. I'm going to play the first musical break. That's a couple minutes long. Why don't you call back in? I know you don't want to, but you don't want the entire thing to be that because you won't be able to hear it. You won't. It won't make sense. You have to come through clear. So you call back in. I'm going to go to the first break. Okay?
As well. I'll go in for me as well at the moment. So I do.
Okay. Then you got to call back in. Okay? All right. We'll talk after the musical break. Okay, just call back in.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Now, folks, we're going to our first musical break, and I'm going to do Emily's song by John Lodge of the Moody Blues, which is all he wrote for his daughter, Emily. It's a beautiful song about being in a child's mind and the fairy tale that they live in and how a father could just connect with that child. And here we go. It's 3 minutes and 4 seconds.
I do know the warmth your smile can bring to me. I want to tell you about the words you do not know.
Oh,
such a pretty little song, like a fairy tale itself, that song. And I think that's from Every Good Boy Does Every Good Boy Deserves Favor, from the Moody Blues album. Now, let's go back to Martin. He's been calling in and calling in. Let's see, which one is he? Martin, can you hear me? I don't think he can hear me on this phone. Hold on. There's one coming up. Martin, can you hear me? Martin, hello? Martin, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Martin? Uh-oh. Let's try it again. I lost my callers, too. I had a couple callers there, and they left. We are having some difficulties, folks, with the Blog Talk Radio. There's Martin again. Hold on. Let me see if he can come through. Come on. I have to unmute the mic, and this is the problem that they're having, Blog Talk Radio. Can you hear me, Martin? Hello? Martin, can you hear me? Well, folks, this is what it's going to be like tonight, I think. Martin, can you hear me? Hello? Hello, hello, hello. Martin is messaging me. Okay, hold on. This is really tough when you're trying to do live, right? Still trying. Can't hear you. Keep trying. Okay, well, I'm going to talk about, while Martin keeps trying to call in. Well, let's talk about, after the 17th of October, my last show for the season, I'm going to take a nice long break, okay? And this is why I do the show. You know, guys, I don't get paid, okay? I don't care about that. But, you know, I'm not young anymore. I need my time for myself, and I also have some health issues, nothing to worry about. But, you know, basically, I have to take care of me. And I'm going to be off the air November, the rest of October, which is 1-2 weeks, right, after that. And then November, and I may come back in December, we'll see how it goes, or probably in the new year. So you have tonight's show, you have Catherine Olivetti, the Jungian psychologist, and then you have Catherine McIntyre, who channels Henry David Thoreau. Wow. And we will come back in the new year, we being me, because I'm the one-man band or the one-woman show, and my lovely guests. If I can get Martin on tonight, that would be great. Let's try him. Martin, are you there? Come on, Martin. Oh, geez, this is terrible. Well, folks, we have a great show here. I'm going to talk about his book. Let me read. I don't know. Gee, I'm on my own here. He keeps trying to call back in. I have to unmute his mic, which I do. Martin, can you hear me? Martin. Martin, can you hear me? Right, we're having a big problem with the, I don't know what to do here. Try without the headphones. Because clearly something's wrong there. All right, Martin, can you hear me? Hello? Martin, can you hear me? One is working, and it says it's working, and it's not. Oh, jeez. Well, you know, Blog Talk Radio has issues. If you go back over the history of my shows, God knows, you will hear plenty of technical issues. Now, I admit I'm not the most swift on these things, you know, but I have had plenty of screaming rows with them about, I'm, you know, paying for the service. I expect it to work. Yes, stuff happens. You know, the internet has problems, or the equipment you're on has problems, or the microphone doesn't work, whatever. You know, my friend Rick, who's been on my show quite a few times, and I've been on his show many times, Rick Fiorio, the right side of things, it used to be a joke. It was an ongoing issue. He'd be in the middle of this great show, and all of a sudden, boom, blackout, nothing worked. Here's Martin calling back in again. I just keep opening mics to see if he can get through. Martin, you there? Martin, can you hear me? I don't know what to do here. It's not really fair, is it? And it is a definite issue because there's a big sign up here that says it. Martin? I don't know. Should we call it a night? I don't really want to do that if I can help it. He's furiously calling in again and again. It's just lining up, and I'm opening the mic to see if he can hear. And can you hear me, Martin? Martin. Is it working? We had it. We definitely had it. Come on. Martin, can you hear me? Okay. I don't know. I'll keep talking. Let's see if we can get him in here. I have not. What's wrong is probably Blog Talk Radio. Do you want I'm asking him if he'll call me and I'll put him on speakerphone. I don't know what else to do. We have done interviews like that before in the past. Wow. It's frustrating. Like Brexit is frustrating. Well, I want to talk about children, though. I think children need more. Not just love. They need support. They need emotional support. You know, the world has become a very tainted, toxic place for children. I was really looking forward to talking to Martin because, you know, to be a children's author is and should be a responsibility. It is a responsibility. And, I don't know if we're going to get to talk to him. I'm going to ask him if he'd like to reschedule, but it'll be in the new year. Unless he's calling my house now. Just asking him if he gives me his number, I'll call him. Perhaps I can call from the show. Maybe I can call out from the show. Actually, what's the film in America? I'm sorry, folks. I could turn this off, but hopefully we'll connect again and it'll be okay. Here. Okay. Let's see if I can try this. Okay, I'll just do it. This, I don't know. Winging it. Martin keeps calling in. Look at this. Loads of them. Let's see if I can. It should be here. Let's see if I can call. Let's see if it works. Probably won't work because I need the code. I think it only works in America. Dialing. Let's see.
The number you have dialed has not been recognized. Please
right.
try again.
Right. Let's see if I can do it internationally. Let's try it. It probably won't let me. But then it'll bring them into the studio, but let's see. Look at that. Hello? I got people. Let's see what's happening here.
The number you have dialed has not been recognized. Please try again.
That's because, let me just, what's this? Hello, who's on, who's 100, oh, I see. Oh, it's called, oh, I see, what's happening here? Right. There. Okay, Martin, I'm going to call your house phone, that's it. I mean, your mobile. Here we go. Martin? Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just do the rest of the interview here. We don't have much time now because, you know, it's a shame. But you know what? At least yeah. I have you on the line and we can continue. And you will be heard because it'll be recording it. It's recording my voice.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear. I can hear you fine.
Fine. Okay.
Of course it has to echo, but you know, there you go. Okay. Come on, let's get back to it. So let's talk about, so you have this book, you've got the twins, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what is Fairborn Hall? What is it? Did you find it somewhere? Is it something that, does it exist in real life?
No, there is a place in Wales called Fairborn, but it wasn't based on that. Basically, but the idea is that the twins' parents have been collecting, well, stealing magical items from a sinister evil organization called the Nix. Yeah,
right.
They've been doing this for years and years and years, and basically when they had children, they went and hid away from the Nix, and they hid these magical items away, and they've gone and lived in this big country house out in the woods somewhere. And really, I call it Fairborn Hall because these kids, these twins, have been born into a very well-off situation. They live in a really nice big house out right. in the woods. Their parents are quite enlightened. Their father, Corvus Raven, did loads of travelling in India. He had loads of spiritual experiences. He's kind of initiated himself. So, and his mum's, their mum is quite an amazing woman in her own right as well. So they're fair born. They've been born to a very fair, you know, a very well-off situation. And that was the whole idea of this Fairborn Hall. It's just that the kids have been born into a very lucky situation, I guess.
That's interesting. That's okay, that's cool. I love that. So let's go. You touched on India. You were there so many times. Obviously, you just mentioned India. So how did India play a part in not only your own, you know, transformation, spiritual awakening, but have you put it in the book? Have you put something in the book that's referenced? You say here the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. I'm just reading. There is also the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. You know, what kind of magical items are there in the books, right? And you wrote here, and let me just read it so the audience gets an idea. I try to use real mythological items in new ways. So one of the first ideas I had was, which you already spoke about, was Jason and the Argonauts. And in using that in like more modern things, making it a hat, a scarf, glove, etc. And then the Emerald Tablet of Thoth, which is very profound, which has been...
Yeah.
So
with the Emerald Tablet of Thoth, I needed some magical lenses in the story.
Yeah.
So I thought, what could you make magical lenses out of? And I thought of the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. You know, it's an emerald, like green glass that you can cut it down and you can polish it and make lenses out of it. And I thought that would be quite a magical kind of lens, you know, for seeing magical items, hidden magical items. You know, I also use something called monatomic gold. I don't know if you've heard of that. In the books, and basically that's gold reduced to a fine powder, and this is supposedly a real substance. There's a book by Lawrence Gardner called The Shadow of Solomon about this stuff and how you can turn gold into this fine powder, and you can sprinkle this powder onto objects and heat them up and they will float, and if you cool it down then they'll become heavier than earth and drop through the earth. And also, if you heat them up to a certain degree, they will actually vanish into a different dimension. So I use this magical powder in combination with other magical items, such as the golden fleece, to create different sort of magical things. So you can make the kids can disappear and vanish and things like that by using combinations of items.
Very alchemical.
Yes. So it's not just like sort of mythological ideas. It's like, you know, I mean, this is like sort of latest cutting edge scientific stuff, supposedly. I don't know if it's real. I've never had any of the stuff myself, but I've read books about it. Right. I'm just trying to use things I can find that's kind of real. That makes people go, wow, and go on Google and look it up and go, oh, yeah, that's real stuff. and that's what I like to do, is to try and educate as well as entertain.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so fascinating and magical for children, you know.
Yeah. The world is full of like so much magical and fantastic stuff, you know, like the Great Pyramids. I mean, they struck me with awe and wonder when I was at a very young age, and I was always fascinated by them. And you were saying earlier, you were asking me about going to India. When I went to India, I spent a lot of time reading lots of books.
Yeah.
You know, it was like going back to school, knowing what I know now, if you see what I mean. You know,
yeah.
I went off to India and I took loads of books with me and I lay around in a hammock and I educated myself on all kinds of things, on ancient Egypt, on the Mayans, on shamanism and loads of things like that. And I took the opportunity to just read loads. A great influence for me back then was a book called Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock.
Yes,
you know,
I know the name, and I, you know what, I used to love to watch Edge TV. You know Edge TV? It was on here about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was on cable, Edge TV. It was all metaphysics, spiritual, you know, filmmakers who did everything. Like Graham Hancock was actually on the I think it was Theo's show. Theo Charmers had a show, and all these different guys. I'm friends with some of them now, but I would say that we were very lucky, because before the sort of Big Brother, you're not going to learn anything mystical or magical while I'm the president or I'm the whatever. That channel ran a couple years, and it really opened. Even I thought I was educated, but you know what? You never stop learning. And I was, I learned so much by watching it. And Graham Hancock was on there a couple times, so I do know the name.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff about UFOs on those channels too, which we I wrote for a year. I just stopped writing for a UFO magazine called Outer Limits. Outer Limits magazine. So, which is great. That's online. So there's a lot of stuff out there for people, and that's really important too. The point you're making, you went to India and you educated yourself. You don't have to go to a formal school, but the reading empowers people, and what you read, what you fill your head with. I'm a child of the 60s. You know, what did we fill our heads with? And some people filled them with LSD. I didn't go that route. I decided that it was more important to experience life. So I hitchhiked through Europe when I was 21. I did the whole hippie trail myself. I didn't go to India. I didn't go to the Far East, but I did learn so much. That's how I ended up in England, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, so
I think it's really important to find something that you're really interested in. And you know, for me, I was really interested in ancient civilizations and all that kind of stuff, and spiritual stuff. And so going to India and having that time traveling gave me the opportunity to explore that stuff that is my heart's desire, you know. And everyone's got to find something that like really rings their bell.
Yes.
And get into it, you know, and give yourself the opportunity to really learn about it, you know, and not be trapped by one point of view. You know, try and get as many different aspects of things as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just looking at my notes, and you sent me these gorgeous notes about your book, your books, and it's very interesting, the twins, and how they, you say here, so now there is a complete role reversal. The Knicks are making changes, and the twins want to keep everything the same. In the first book, there are big moral questions for the twins. It starts off simple. Back in the past, the Knicks have exposed a lie. So if the kids change things back to how they should be, they are protecting a lie. Do you protect the lie or protect time?
Yeah, that's in the second story, which is subtitled Trapped in Time. And so basically the Knicks have gained the ability to travel in time, and they've gone back and made changes in the past. And then the twins find out about this. And so they want to protect the timeline. So they have to go back and make changes. And to be honest, I'll tell you that one of the first things they come across is the whole moon landing conspiracy thing. They use that.
Oh, that's so great.
You know, cause although I do believe that man landed on the moon, when I first came across those documentaries that questioned whether man landed on the moon, I found them quite compelling. And I think it's a really interesting kind of question.
Yeah.
And so the kids go back in time, and one of the things that the Knicks have done is that they've revealed the lie, but they've revealed to everybody that man didn't really land on the moon. So the kids have to put that back. They have to change things so that everyone thinks that man did land on the moon. So they have to protect the lie, and Pam doesn't want to protect the lie. He's going, look, it's only a little lie. It doesn't really matter. And Nick was going, no, we have to protect our timeline. So there's a bit of friction between them that happens straight away. And then after that, then there's a bigger friction in that they have to go back to the Titanic. And basically the Knicks have found a very, very powerful magical item on the Titanic. And they're going to steal this item, and they're going to sink the Titanic in the process. So they go back. Pam manages to save the Titanic so that it's not going to sink. However, in trying to stop the Knicks from stealing this magical item, he ends up blowing a huge hole in the Titanic. And this is the choice that he has to make. He has to, like, be the person responsible for sinking the Titanic, or he has to let these evil people get away with a very magical item. And this causes, like, a huge rift between him and Mithra. And Pam isn't very happy about the fact that he's had to sink the Titanic and kill 1,500 people. And basically what happens is he then gets lost in time. And what happens to him is very interesting, and really is the central act of the book. But it's I like turning things on the head and having a big moral question, you know, but not too deep, because it's for kids, you know. But it's I like twisting things around. Now, in the very first book that I wrote, the very first dilemma that the children have is they meet a character that wants to destroy all of the world's computer money. And he presents this as, you know, the Knicks are a very rich and powerful organization. If we destroy all the world's computer money, we're destroying their power. And so the twins kind of go along with this at first, but then they realize, well, actually, if you destroy all the computer money, there's going to be chaos. It's going to be terrible for normal people. Do we really want to go along with this? So there's a moral quandary within that straight away. You know, it's the idea of the Knicks is that they want to hold back change. They want to stop human evolution.
Right.
And so the people that are against the Knicks want change to happen. But it's not always that simple. You can't just destroy all of the world's money because you want change to happen. Change has to be more like managed sometimes.
Well, you said a mouthful there, because it's already happening, isn't it? Agenda 21 is a big proof of it. Vaccines is another proof. You know, it's very interesting. You know who just wrote his first children's book? It's Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote a book called Grand Dude, because he's got 8 grandchildren. And one of them called him Grand Dude. And he thought it was hysterical. And he decided to write. And he's promoting that right now. He's on TV promoting that right now. And if you're...
I wish I was one of these famous people promoting a book, because it'd be a lot easier.
Yes, I agree. I agree. But I know, I'm an author myself. I know. It's very difficult. That's why I give people this shout. You know, I know what it's like. So, you know, your book sounds so fascinating. And it sounds like you put your heart and soul into it. And so much knowledge. And this is what J.K. Rowling, she sat as a single mother in a cafe in Edinburgh, Scotland, writing on napkins while her baby slept, Harry Potter. She had no money. She was in quite a difficult situation. So if it can happen to her, it can happen to anyone, you know. And I think, and she always says that, you know, don't give up, keep moving forward. And you could be so famous that they only want Harry Potter. They don't care about your other books that you write. And this is, or they immediately, they're a bestseller and nobody's reading them. It's just because of the name. That would be something, that would be worse. We should all have such problems, you know, but these, apparently those are our problems. Okay, let's go back to this. Do you have children? You said you do. You have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. What do they think of the book?
They love my books.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do love them. It's like one of the most fulfilling things in my life is the first time that I read the first like 10 chapters or whatever it was of the very first book, you know, when I first wrote them. And my youngest was, after I finished reading to them, my youngest was dancing up and down on his bed going, "It's even better than Harry Potter." And my eldest was going, "No, it's not. No, it's not. But it's not that true." Because he loves Harry Potter. But, yeah, but no, both of them love it. I just got my latest 3 books in the post actually today, because I've just published another set of stories, Raven of Fairborn Hall stories, called Pandora's Star. And so they've just been published. I just received those in the books, and the kids are really excited to have my books come through. And I want to take them upstairs and read them straight away. And it's great. I love the fact that they're really happy for me. They love it.
That is so wonderful. It says here your books are, what age are your books meant for? You say 7 to 14, right?
Yeah.
And
reading magical fantasy when they get to 13 years old, like, oh no, I'm too old for that. But whereas other teenagers will quite happily read it, you know, and keep on reading it all their lives.
But then they went into Twilight. Oh, my daughter was crazy about all that Twilight stuff, you know, with the vampire and the werewolf. And I don't think that's good for teenagers. But that's me. I'm on the, I'm from the angelic realm. I'm a light worker. I don't like that dark stuff. But kids really, the thing that I think, and I wanted to say this to you too, is that, the magical child within is a real thing in psychology. Yeah. And when we go through therapy, we often go directly to the inner child. And that is where all the pain is. That is where all the suffering is. That is where all the emotion is. And that is also where all the love is. So when you have access, like you do, to the magical child within, all those years in India, all that work that you did, you were really nourishing that child. And you're bringing all that to not only your own two children, but to all the children who read your books. And isn't that a tremendous gift to the world?
Yeah, well, you mentioned earlier, another book that I wrote called A Journey of Initiation.
Yeah, I want to get...
published recently, and that's about, the death experience that I had in India back in 2001. And within that, there's the process of how I came across that death experience, which was an initiation. And giving, voice to that child within was a big part of that. The process of self-realization
is
largely to do with giving voice to that inner child. And I remember being a child and listening to adults having conversations that would turn into arguments. And I would sit there and see how both sides were right and both sides were wrong at the same time. And I wanted to be able to explain that, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
And then I found myself in similar situations when I was traveling. And I realized that I kind of had a responsibility to try and speak and explain this, to explain, actually, you're right in these circumstances and you're right in these circumstances. But it was also a process of learning to speak with an equal balance of compassion and intelligence. Your throat sits in between your heart and your brain.
Yeah.
And you have to use both when you speak, so that you're not using truth as a weapon, but you can use truth as a healing tool.
Yes, absolutely.
And that was all very healing for me to be able to, and this is one of the great things about traveling, is to be able to get away from everybody that you know.
Right.
But you're not held back by anybody else's expectations, and learn to be who you really are and who you really were in the first place before you got it all covered up as a teenager in learning to be what everybody else wanted you to be or what you thought you had to be in order to fit in.
You see, I love that. I think I couldn't agree with you more. I said to my daughter, who's just graduated university, she has traveled a lot. She has. But, she's 23. She just turned. Go have a life. Don't rush into anything. Don't rush into commitment. Be young when you are young. Take that time to discover who you are. In astrology, you don't even really know who you are until you're 20. You hit your first Saturn return, which is the 29th year, 28, 29, 30 for some. And I agree with that. Who you are at 19 is a hell of a lot different than when you're 30 or 29. And you're meant to be mature and grown up, really grown up. The brain, we know now, the brain does not fully mature until you're 26 years old. And it's a very interesting time with kids, because the teenagers go into the whole drug thing and the drinking and the late, the early 20s. And you think about the brain trying to mature and grow and develop in that time. So I say read books, read magical books. That's the best escapism you'll ever have. And it's a wonderful way to develop your imagination. If you're an artist or you're a musician, these are many, many things come from reading great books. And the Beatles would have said that. There's a lot of people who were reading great literature and poetry in the hit revolution of the 60s. That was a very key thing. What were you reading? People walking around holding albums, like, what were you listening to? LPs, vinyl. But they were also holding books, poetry books. You know, folk singers were into poetry, and Joni Mitchell, poetry. Poetry also stimulates the brain. So, you know, all these different things create intelligent, emotionally intelligent human beings.
And I've got to say, you know, Sean, I stopped smoking about 4 years ago. And the way that I stopped smoking was to allow myself to buy as many comic books as I wanted. Because comic books were something I loved when I was a child.
Right.
And it's something I stopped doing as I got into adulthood. Actually, when I started traveling a lot, I could no longer keep up with reading comics. And then having children, I wanted to have comics found in the house for them. And I really wanted to stop smoking. And I realized that there was a child within me that just really wanted to read comics.
Yeah.
So instead of spending that money every year on tobacco, I thought I'm going to spend it on comics. And every time I wanted to have a fag, every time I wanted to smoke, I'd go and read a comic instead.
That's really funny. That's a good thing.
Yeah. And so I stopped smoking by reading Marvel comics.
Do you know, I quit smoking too about five, I think it's almost 5 years now. Funny, I was late too. I went back like an idiot. And here's what I did. I just said to myself, and it's funny, it's very similar, isn't it funny? It's different, but it's similar. I went to, in my mind, being a young person, like a child. Now, I didn't smoke when I was a child, obviously. And I lived my life. I didn't die without it. And I put my headset, you know, I did a lot of meditation. I just went into this place and I thought, my God, you know, I can survive without cigarettes. And that was it. I just put them down and I never touched them again. And I never had one craving, which is, it's mind over matter. It's just the whole thing about, you know, there aren't, we can go into this, we don't have time, but we could go into the nefariousness of what everyone trying to be addicted to something, and then you don't have time to wake up, you don't have time to be awoken, you don't have time to read, you don't have time, you know, you're getting your fix somewhere along the line all the time. And that is designed, I think, you know, through the powers that be that aren't really very nice.
Yeah, we have a really fast life, and it's very difficult. You know, when you have a thought, it's very difficult to see it being answered by the universe, because there's just so many things happening every day. Everything is just like covered up, swamped in work and TV and you know, like the internet, and there's just so much happening. Life is so fast. And one of the great things about traveling was, you know, to just go away and have no possessions, and everything slows down. And, you know, when you have a thought and you ask a question, you can see the answer that the universe brings sort of straight away. You know, it's very clear, because there's nothing else going on. And I wish everyone could just simplify their lives and see how easy everything is.
Martin, you know, we only have about 6 minutes left, so, and then I have to do my thing, and then I have to play us out, and that's all calculated in the time there. So let's just go back to Journey of the Initiation. Tell me, you know, what this book is about. Give me the brief on it. What will people get from reading it? It is your story of waking up, and you talked about...
You've got like the story of what happened before the death experience in 2001, which was basically, it's a process of self-initiation, and it's a process of self-realization, realizing your own habitual tendencies, realizing your own control tendencies. And if you read the Celestine Prophecy, it's very much a Celestine Prophecy kind of story. You know, it's recognizing that like coincidence like drives your story and giving up your fear-based control tendencies so that like the random, so the universe can enter your life and so you can start living in your karmic story rather than in your ego story. And this is the process really that I went through like over a period of like about 5 years of traveling. And that culminated in a death experience in 2001 that was initiatory experience. It contained lots of initiatory motifs. And anyone that knows anything about like ancient Egyptian resurrection initiation processes, you know, like the king dying and becoming one with the god of resurrection, with Osiris, and traveling through the body of the mother and then being reborn as the Horus. Yeah. If you know anything about that kind of stuff, you will recognize all of that within my that death experience story. And then when I come back from that, basically, my third eye was fully open, so everything was auras all over the place. I could hardly see because of auras everywhere. It was just completely out of control. My hair stood up on end for about a year afterwards because I completely fried my nervous system. And it was difficult. I mean, it was almost like my consciousness had become like controlling consciousness on planet Earth. I'd think something and it would happen.
Wow.
And it was a really like crazy time. And that all died down after about a year or so. And just what I was doing. I mean, again, my life was totally driven by coincidence. I never had to think about what I was doing next. It was always obvious what I had to do next. And I found myself in Glastonbury in a friend's place. And I had an opportunity to try the active ingredient of ayahuasca, which is 5-DMT.
Right, I know.
And I had another experience with that of like going off to the Godhead. And basically, it's connected to the first experience. Like there's a bit in a book of within Kabbalah which says, and Metatron says, in order to travel to the throne of God, you need to don the garment of light. And in the first experience, I donned the garment of light. In the second experience, I traveled to the throne of God, which is the Godhead. And some years later, I found a book by Jeremy Nadler called The Shamanic, The Wisdom in the Shamanic Wisdom in the Pyramid Texts. And he confirms in that the kings of Egypt went through two initiations. In the first, they become one with the God of resurrection. And in the second, they become one with the Godhead. And this is basically what happened to me. And then I went through a process of learning about all of this and sort of like coming to terms with it and writing about it. And so like there's also like finishing off the book, there's sort of like the realizations. What did I learn by all of this? And first and foremost, I learned what I just told you about, like sort of the initiation practices of like the Egyptians. And I also learned some stuff like through the Godhead experience to do with like sort of sound being like sort of the formative creative energy in the universe. You know, if you think of like Chadley, what's called like cymatics or Chadley patterns.
Yes.
And we can put some sand on a plate and then you put sound to it and it shapes into a pattern. You know, you've got like sound is like it is like sort of a creative force. It's the harmonics of things that cause things to hold together. It's like sort of chemistry is based on the sound, the background sound patterns. It's very much like to do with the flower of life and the platonic solids that you find.
Martin, anyway. I have to stop you there because we're running out of time and it's so fascinating. So I want to thank you. My God, we're done. I have 5 minutes left and I've got to round up the stuff and play the music out and that takes 3 minutes. So I just want to say I absolutely love you being on the show. You are a very wise human being and you are very astute and awake. And I will have you back, I promise you, in the new year. How's that?
That's fantastic. To work.
Well, I think it was Blog Talk Radio because they have a known thing here that says that. So, you know, we were lucky that you lived in the UK and I could call you. So I'm going to round it up by saying, if you want to your kids to be fascinated, please read Martin Adams' books, the series of books called The Ravens of Fairborn Hall. And if you want to really go with Martin through his journey of the initiation, it sounds fascinating. I'd love to read that. And I'm going to say thank you very much, Martin, for being on the show. And you can buy his books on Amazon. And yes, right? Amazon?
Yes, they're all available on Amazon. And thanks for having me on. And I'm sorry that I've had to rush a bit. I hate having to talk fast. Like I could see the ball running out of time. So I'm just blurting now. I can before time ran out, so thanks for having me on, Sean.
You're very welcome, Martin. And just let me finish up the show, so hang in there. Okay, I'm going to read The Magic Child Within, which is my In This Metaphysical Moment that I wrote for this show, and it's really lovely. So here we go. The Magic Child Within. What is wonder? It is the ability to be awestruck, mystified, and delighted in something, and be curious about it, observing it like a rarity, an unusual and obtuse object. It can be a person who delights us, makes us smile, and we wonder about. It can be magical and come from fairy tales and rainbows. It can even come from mom or dad telling us a wondrous story of events and adventures that one day we too hope to go on or go through. Children all have within them a magical child, and this part of their psyche is tender, needing stimulation and craving the extraordinary. It later in life becomes adjacent to the seeker, the mystic, the guru, or even the magician. How can we nurture this exquisite attribute of children and keep it safe, fresh, and alive within them? The answer, books. Beautifully told, written children's books of magical adventures, stimulating their curiosity, awakening their brains for more information, and unbeknownst to them, while they are enthralled, they are learning all the time about the myriad of possibilities out there in the world. The feelings they experience, the whole gamut of excitement, thrills, and even some scary or sad moments reflect life itself in a safe and nurturing environment. In this metaphysical moment, I read great books to my child, and I stimulate their need for adventure and magic and silliness all within the confines of a bedroom story or a delightful gathering around the hearth. I bring my own inner child out too while I listen as I read to them. It is a curious thing that when children are loving what they are learning, the teacher or parent is also loving it too. Read to your children age-appropriate books that open their minds and stimulate their emotional spectrum. Then you will have not only a wise child, but a loving, happy child too. That's it. We're done. Thank you, Martin.
That's lovely.
Hey, you're very welcome. I'm going to play us out with a very magical man. Alan Parsons writes a lot of mystical stuff, and he's just come out with a beautiful new album called The Secret, and this is Miracle. We'll see you all next week, folks, by Alan Parsons. Thank you again. Goodbye. You're very welcome. I'm going to hang up.
There's a sound to the light this morning as it's pouring into my heart. And for a moment I knew the stars could shine through me. But my worries float on the evening, hiding behind the clouds. And now I'm certain that life's storm.
miracle. Let next week's show work without a hitch. That would be a miracle. We had a lovely show anyway using the phone. It all came out in the end. I want to thank my guest. He's a wonderful, very wise young man. He's not that young, but, you know, an adult. And to write beautiful children's books is such a gift. So please get his books if you have kids. Or his adult book, which is all about the journey of the initiated, to open up to these magical, mystical realms and actually do the inner work, which is what he was doing in India and other traveling places. And get out there and see the world, folks. That's my message to you tonight. I know it's October, it's getting cold. Of course, it's warmer down under. And we have someone from down under in my chat room right now. His name is Fidelio Bob. Hello, Bob. Just a shout out to you because you came. He says it's 5:30 in the morning there in Australia. CR Bowles 56, thank you for listening and coming back every week. Thank you for being a friend of the show. You're going to Mexico. Wonderful. Cancun. Have a wonderful time. But so Bob is awesome. I'm talking about my chat room here on YouTube. Okay, folks, that's it for tonight. It's cold. It's getting cozy out there. Climb under the blanket. Have a nice cocoa. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye, God bless, and thank you again to Martin. And check out his books. Again, their name is The Ravens of Fairborn Hall, and there's a series, book one, book two, book three, etc. Okay, bye now. Bye, everyone. Take care. Trying to end my show, and it won't let me. Okay, come on. Look at this. That's interesting. What happened to you? Another technical difficulty. I can't end the show. That's nice. Come on! Let me end the show. All right. I'll have to do it through here. That's it. And...